Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2014. Lecture 14, delivered on October 6, 2014. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, Review for Exam 1. I'm going to go through the exam as thoroughly as I possibly can, and then I'm going to open it up for you to ask me questions. If you say, well, is this going to be on the exam? And it's not, I'll say, no, that's not going to be on the exam. And if you need something like how to price a bond, something like that, we can talk about that. Also, after this, I'll have a special office hour tomorrow from noon to 1, so you can stop by and ask me some other questions if we don't get something done today. But the first round is to listen carefully today. First things first, there at 7:30 p.m. tonight, a document will pop up in ReggieNet for the course. That document is the income statement and balance sheet of an S&P 500 corporation. And I won't tell you which one it is. You'll see in just a few hours. And I won't tell you anything more, but if you look at the financials, you think, well, what did we do in this class with financial statements? And that should give you a very good clue as to what this is about for a question on the exam. There will be a question on the exam that will have that as the data that you need to use, that is financial statement data, that you'll need to use to answer the question. And it's up to you to remember, well, what kinds of math did we do with financial statements? And there was one thing quite specifically that we did with financial statements. So it wouldn't hurt you to have all of that done and put that on your note card when you come to the exam. Otherwise, you're going to be cranking things that you could have done on your own. Now, as far as the exam goes, what you can bring in, a note card, 4x6, and you bring in your formula sheet. I'm not going to have them. You need to print it out. And nothing on the formula sheet written, just what the sheet was itself. You got your note card, and one of the things, like I said, that note card should be for is to get the information for the calculations from that sheet that you're going to have that will also be showing up on the exam. Now, three parts to the exam. First part is multiple choice, or multiple guess, depending upon your particulars. That's 50 questions. Heads up on that, that's usually where you fall down. It's tough. You get used to it, and I don't like multiple choice myself, but since most of you are going to have certifications and things like that, you'll be taking multiple choice tests your whole miserable lives. So I like to include it just to remind you of that. Again, 50 questions. Now, we're going to go back through all this in a minute here. Now, part two is workout questions. The workout questions, there will be approximately, now understand some of these will be several part questions. The workout, well, you know, I could actually just put the exam up on the overhead so you could see it.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I know, right? Bite me. Looks like about five questions, but remember, some of them are multiple part. Like one question might be a whole bunch of calculating financial ratios or changes in ratios, stuff like that. And you might have a bond question, and that might have several parts to it. Price of a bond, then a yield to maturity of a bond, then the yield to call of a bond. So the parts might have multiple sections to them. And then part three is your essays. You're going to be given five essay questions. You will answer four of those. Don't try to answer five. I'll eat your ass. And each answer is one sentence only. You try to slide a second sentence, I'll just strike it out and take a point off, plus whatever you lose for not getting the information in the first sentence. I'll talk more about the essays here. I'm going to go through 16 possible questions. The questions that are the problems for the essay part. All of them, all five that are on the exam will come from those 16 that I give you here in a while. Okay? So it's not like I am not warning you of what's coming. I'm just not warning you about how bad it is. Let's go through the multiple choice part here. That's the hardest part, especially because it's like free-for-all. Anything could go in that. In that part, I will definitely ask you to give me the yield on a one-year treasury bill. You remember that? It's real simple, just the interest earned, dollar interest earned over the price you paid. Have you find the yield? Something simple like that. Oh, God, did I ask that? Oh, I'm sorry. That's insensitive. Oh, I said 50. Now that's 20 questions. Jeez. No. Yeah, that would have made your hind leg go up and down. I might have you on that. There will be some math questions on that first part. And remember, in the multiple choice answers, I will figure out how you could have done it wrong, and that will be one of the answers. So that helps you out. So even if you get an answer that's one of the multiple choice answers, that doesn't mean you've gotten it right. That means I knew the mistake that you made. Okay, I might also have you calculate an effective yield. I'm going to ask questions about the Federal Reserve. You know, something like how many governors are there? How many voting members are on the FOMC? How many permanent voting members are on the FOMC, which is not one of the tools of monetary policy. Some things like that. Just the basic nuts and bolts of the Fed. Now, I'm going to going away from that, I'm going to have some terminology questions. Something like, I might do something with the CAPM where I say, well, which one of these formulas is the capital asset pricing model? Or which one of these algebraic expressions is the expected market premium over risk-free? Or something like that. Just a list of algebraic expressions. I'll say, well, which one is this? Kind of thing. Ask you about the money supply aggregate measures, M1, M2, and M3. Well, which one of the aggregates, M1, M2, or M3, includes these? Something like that. I'll ask you about costs. Which cost of the following is not a cost we consider in financial analysis or in financial planning? You know, I could put sunk costs, replacement costs, opportunity costs. Which one of those, historical costs, which one of those is not a cost that we, or I might put it the other, which one of these is a cost that we would consider? Something along that line to test you on your knowledge of cost, how we consider cost in finance. Make sure you know the difference between the different kinds of financial markets. A primary market versus a secondary market. A money market versus a capital market. That kind of those kinds of market concepts. Make sure you know the components of the risk-free rate. And make sure you know the components of the risk premium. Remember, there are three parts of a risk premium. Make sure you know about business entities. The difference between a corporation and other kinds of business entities. You're going to need to know how open market operations work. If the Fed wants to contract the money supply, what is that doing to supply and demand for bonds? How is that affecting the supply of lendable funds? What's that doing to interest rates? Make sure you know how to understand the contractionary and expansionary money supply. So, for example, in a contractionary money supply environment, the Fed's trying to pursue a clawback of liquidity. Then the traders would be selling treasury bills to banks. Because if they can sell them to banks, that means the banks will give up money they've got, and that'll make the money supply go down. So if the traders are selling treasuries, what is happening? Is that a supply or a demand action on treasury markets? The traders at the domestic trading desk are selling treasuries to banks. Is that affecting the supply of or the demand for treasuries, first of all? Come on. Supply. And what's it doing to the supply of treasuries in the open market? It's increasing it because these traders are flooding the market with treasuries. So what does supply of anything do to the price of it? Pushes the price down. What does that do to the yields then on the treasuries? Price goes down, yields on the treasuries go up. So in other words, the Fed is causing treasury yields to rise. At the same time, as the banks see these great price bargains on treasuries, they start giving up their money and sending it to the Fed in exchange for these on-sale treasury certificates. What does that do to the supply of lendable funds? As these banks start paying the Fed in cash dollars to buy treasuries, what does that do to the supply of banks' lendable funds? It pushes it downward. And what does that do to the interest rate? And what interest rate is it that is being affected directly by the banks getting money out of their bank accounts and giving it to the Fed for the Fed to grind up? What rate is that that's being affected? No. Federal funds rate. Bingo. So, in other words, the Fed cannot directly peg the federal funds rate, but through the open market operations, it can cause it to move towards a target that the Fed wants. That's probably the most difficult concept in this part of finance, of the finance course. And it's one that you should have learned from economics, but I know damn well you didn't. Which is why you should have had me for your teacher, because I'm so damn good at everything. Shut up. Okay. I mentioned, make sure you know know the difference between a bill, a bond, a bill, a note, and a bond. a bill, a note, and a bond. And also know what we mean by the issuer and the buyer. You, sir, I borrow $100 from you and I'm going to pay it back in a couple of years. I'll hook you back up within a couple of years. Who is the issuer of the debt security?
You want the money, right?
I borrowed the money. Who is the issuer?
You're the issuer.
I am the issuer. What type of debt instrument is it?
How many years, you say?
A couple of years.
It's going to be...
Don't look at your damn
it's
notes.
No, it's not a note. No? It's going to be a note.
Okay. I said notes and that triggered your memory. You tricked me there. One of these has coffee from last week, and one of them has coffee fresh today. I left my cup here. Okay, do I feel lucky? All right. That was last week. No, I'm serious, noobs. This stuff is chunked. Okay. That's enough about the multiple choice for now, and we'll come back and you can ask me questions if you wish. No, let me do it now. Go ahead. Go.
You take out a loan on a home, say the 100, it was a question on quiz 0, I believe.
Yeah.
That is, you're the same as what he was just...
I am the issuer. And what kind of an instrument is it? No. On a home? It's a bond. Because you're not going to pay that off in 7 years. Well, the loan structure, you might actually pay it off in 2 years. But it's structured around usually a 20, 25, or 30-year mortgage. Say that again. Well, if it's a mortgage, then I would say something like, this is a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. I can't even go into that. Yeah, other questions on multiple choice? Yeah.
Just to make sure, so say if you're the bank and I'm borrowing money for you for my house.
Yes.
I'm the one issuing the note.
And I'm the one buying the note. That's the loan. The loan is I'm buying at that loan amount. You create a piece of paper. Go.
Would you say studying
it's a huge thing. Look, I'm not trying to pop. Well, yeah, I want to flunk all of you, but I'm not. There will be a few that could be, I've not seen this before, but for the most part, I've shown you at least a good representation of most of them. Now, even going on to part two here, one of the questions will be, you remember that accounting quiz, that stupid accounting quiz where you had to put together those idiotic puzzles? One of the questions in part two will just be, remember on the second page I gave you this information on the revenues, cost of goods sold, and the selling and general and administrative expenses and the interest they paid and all that. I gave them to you in kind of a random order. Going to do that in part two. You're going to have a question. Look, it'll look almost exactly like the one on the quiz. And all you have to do is put together the parts. There will be one crucial difference. You will have to, I will give you the tax tables like you saw in the book and like I showed you in class, and you'll have to calculate the tax that will be owed. So the question will be structured. You'll get that mess, that random numbers, just like you did on quiz two on the second page. And then I'm going to say, report gross income. That's easy. Revenue minus cost of goods sold. Then I'm going to say, report operating income. That's easy. You take gross income and subtract out selling and general and administrative and depreciation. And that gets you operating. And then I'll say, give me your EBT. That's easy too. You just take operating income minus your interest. And then I'll say, report net income. And that's the one where you'll have to look at the EBT and calculate the tax that is due at that EBT using the tax rate tables. So there'll be four parts to it. Yeah. 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 And even on the edge, if you can write really small. I said 4x6. Yeah. Yeah, I will in just a second. Go ahead. Yeah, it should be. It's still up there, yeah. Yeah, print it out. And the reason I'm saying that is it should be attached to the exam, but I had it happen a couple of years ago. It just didn't show up on the exam. So make sure you have your own copy of it. Yeah. Damn, woman. One. If you fail the exam, you deserve to go to ACE Trucking School. Okay? Let me go through the other questions, and then I'll go back and show you a couple of things here, okay? First, let me fire up this computer here, and... Okay. Give me a second here. Sick of this. Dream on. Yeah, there it is. Okay, I just pulled up those tax tables. Okay, now, other questions on part two. I'm going to ask you questions to get some ratios and some percentage changes. Don't round too soon. I can't emphasize that enough. Don't round too soon because you could be off a little bit. I'm going to have you quote a bond. We're going to have you find the yield to maturity of a bond. And I'm going to have you find the yield to call of a bond. I'm going to have you quote a bond or find its price. Watch out. If I tell you to quote, that is a tenth of the price and there is no dollar sign. You'll lose a point if you give me a dollar sign on a quote. Because that's you're telling someone this is a $115 instrument when it's actually a $1,150 instrument. So if I tell you to quote, don't put any sign on it. Also, with respect to, ratios, make sure that you put the right units of measure for the ratio. Gross margin, net margin, those are percentages. Return on assets, return on equity, those are percentages. Debt to asset ratio, that's a percentage. But current ratio, quick ratio, and acid test, those are times. Those are factors. The symbol after it is a little time sign. Inventory turnover ratio, that's a times sign. So make sure you put the right number. And always, always two decimal places. I want you to remember that, especially if you get a number that hits exactly, let's say, 6%. You give 6.00%. Now, there's a reason for that. Because if you report 6%, the user of your information doesn't know how many decimal places of accuracy you gave there. Did you just come up with something that was about 6% and write 6%? But if you write 6.00%, I know you meant 6%. So even if it's not, even if it stops before two decimal places, put it to two decimal places, always when you're reporting. That leaves no ambiguity about how accurate you are. Okay, I gave you a stock price problem you saw with Microsoft. Going to do it on the exam, no question about it. I'm going to give you the information so that you can get the discount rate by the CAPM. And that'll be your first question. What discount rate will you use? And then the next part, I'll say, what is the price of this common stock now? And that's the second part of the problem. So I'll give you the information so that you can use the CAPM to get the discount rate to use. And then you will use that discount rate in the formula. And remember that formula, really? Oh, is the price of the security is going to be D1 over K. The price of the stock is D1 over K sub S minus the growth rate. And remember that D1 is this dividend grown one period. Remember that. I'll give you the current dividend. That's not the one you use. And then you should be able to come up. And this K sub S, you get from the CAPM. And you'll have all the information you need so that you can calculate the K sub S from the capital asset pricing model for the security. Straight up question is just pound out the numbers and hope you don't make a mistake on your calculator. This one is, the problem is that here's where you'll make your mistake. Either you will use D0, the dividend that I'm telling you is current, or you might forget to put parentheses around K sub S minus G, and then you'll get it wrong. Just watch that second one. It's so easy to make that mistake, and then you get a number that looks okay, but it's just not right. And then I am going to have you calculate a loan payment. I'm going to have you calculate a loan payment. Now, that's just your calculator. Just your calculator. Now, let's go backwards here a little bit. If you have your calculator, whip it out. Here's a 25-year fixed-rate mortgage for $240,000 and an APR of 6.79%. What is the monthly payment? And B, what is the effective yield? Now, the second part, and I can't remember whether I told you this or not. In a loan agreement, by law, even though you're saying it's an APR of 6.79%, the lender must disclose the effective yield on the loan as well. And so that's what we would do. What do you get for your payment here? First things first, what is N? How many years? How many payments per year? 12. So you do 12 times 25. Now go down, I percent. What's the APR? Just type in 6.79 divided by 12, because it's going to be recalculated after every monthly payment. So it's divided by 12. Go down. What's the next thing on your calculator? What's the next thing on the calculator? PV. Okay. What do you put in there? -240000. Don't forget that negative sign, because otherwise your calculator will have a cow. Now, working your way down from there, the FV, there is your payment's what you need. So leave that alone. Make sure your FV is zeroed. This loan doesn't have a back-end kicker on it. And you got 1-1, and for God's sake, down at the bottom, make sure that you toggle for end. And then go back up to PMT and hit alpha solve. Survey says, what is it? What's your monthly payment? 1-6 what? There you go. Now, before you go on, yeah.
What are you talking about when you say go down? What must be at the
end? Down. You're just working your way down to make sure all the numbers are right. FV should be zero. Go down one with your. Yeah, just make sure that FV is zero. Then 1-1, and that bottom toggle should say end. Does it say end? Go back up now to the PMT. Okay, well, get it in there. Now, here's the quick reality check. You can't know that you got the answer right. You just can't know that. But you can say, does my answer make sense? Because the one nice thing about these calculations is if you do something wrong, usually, the whole universe blows up in that calculator, and your answer looks ridiculous. So, $1,664 look about right for a monthly payment? You probably wouldn't even know this, though. It actually does. On a 25-year mortgage for a big house like this, yeah, that's about what you're going to pay. In that range. So if you're planning your first house to be in that range of prices, that's a heavy loan. Okay. Now, what is the effective yield? Come out of your calculator. This is really easy to do. Remember that the effective yield formula is nothing but, in this case, 1 plus 0.0679 over 12 to the 12th power minus 1, and then you times the whole thing by 100%. The effective yield formula, all you do is take 1 plus the annual divided by the number of compoundings, all to the number of compoundings per year, and then minus 1. Don't forget to minus the 1. And the answer should be a little more than the APR. You'll know if you've done it wrong because your answer will be just ridiculous looking. This is, again, one of those where if you do it wrong, you're going to know pretty quickly. So it should be some answer that is a little above 6.79%. What do you get for the effective yield?
7.01.
That's about right. So in this case, there you go. That's all there is to it. Now, this is all calculator, so that makes it easier in a way, but you also have to remember the things like divided by 12 and all that kind of stuff, okay? Now, let's back up here. Now, working our way back up the line, remember with bonds that I expect you to be able to do it on a semi-annual basis. So, for example, if I give you a BNT 5.8% 2029, and let's say that the quote on it is $97.85. It's quoting $97.85. Find the yield to maturity. If you can do these, you're fine in this section of the test. I mean, most of it's just mechanical stuff. Just don't forget the rules. Okay, so now, how many years to maturity does this have? 15. So what do you key in for N? 30. Because the payments are broken up into two a year. So you put in 30. Now you drop down. Whoops. I forgot to say, yield right now on this bond. Whoop, I don't need to do the yield. I'm okay. No, we need to find the yield, okay? So you're going to leave the I percent blank, leave it whatever it is. Now you go down to the PV, and you key in negative what? Key in what in the PV? Talk to me. What do you key in? What is it? 978.50. Negative 978.50. That's the price of the bond. Price value is 978.5. Now go down to the payment. What are your annual payments? The coupon, what's the annual coupon? What is it? $58. So each 6 months you're going to get 58 divided by 2. So payment, 58 divided by 2. Now you go down to FV, your face value. What's that bond going to give you at the end of its life with the last interest check? $1,000. Now we can go up and find the yield to maturity. Toggle back up to the I percent and hit alpha solve. However, you have just calculated a half year's interest. You've got to multiply it by 2. So go right over to the end of that number that came out there and just hit times 2 and put your and toggle down. Rounded to 2 decimal places, what's your answer? What is it? 6.02. And finally, you just say to yourself, okay, was this bond selling at a premium or a discount to par? Talk to me. Did this bond sell at a premium or a discount to par? It's selling at a discount. And sure enough, we found out that the market says this bond should be paying 6.02%. The bond is actually paying only 5.8%. So the market is saying, you suck. This bond is not going to be at par. It's going to be below par. So we found 6.02%. Yeah, we probably got it right. Because it should be, the yield to maturity should be come out to be above the coupon rate. That's all there was to it. So that's finding the yield to maturity. And finding the price is just the other side of that. Here, let's do one. Finding the price is actually a little easier. CLM 6.6%, 2034, with a yield to maturity of 6.49%. Quote the bond. Quote the bond. So at the N line, how many years to maturity is this bond? 20 years. Times what? 2. Now here we've got the YTM. So you go down and you do 6.49. Divided by 2, because there are two compoundings, two payments a year. So the interest rate is divided into two pieces. Now you go down. You don't know the price value, PV. Now you go to the payment. What's the annual payment? $66. So what do you do? Divide by 2. 66 divided by 2. Now, just make sure, because it has that face value, you get at the end the kicker of a thou, and you got a 1-1 end. Now just go back up and go to price value, alpha, solve. Now, we see that this bond is paying a coupon above what the market says it should. So we should end up with a price that is at a premium to par. What do you get for the price? $1,012.22. So I'm done with the problem, right? Nope. I asked you for a quote. So what do you write for the quote? The answer is 101.22. No dollar sign. You give me a dollar sign, I will give you a wedgie back. And no dinner and dancing first. That's all there is to it. Okay, now, popular request, I was asked to do a tax calculation. Let's say we have a company, you've hammered it down, and you've got your earnings before taxes. You've gotten down to the earnings before tax line, and that is $500,000. And we need to subtract out the tax so that we can get the net income. So what's a mother to do? Well, they're... Okay. We've got to make it to $500,000. So the first $50,000 is at 15%. Okay. So what's $50,000? Times 15%, $7,500. So now we crawl from 50 to 75,000, so that's 25,000 more. And we keep a running tab here on the end, okay? At 25, these are cheater tax tables. Do you see them?
Yeah.
Because they give you the baseline from the one below it. Do you see it? Let me stop you. These are nice. Yeah. Look at that son of a bitch. Oh, sorry. Do you see the baseline on it? Because I don't need to even worry about it. Well, crap. I ought to put these on the test. Well, I'm going to put the tables, but I might as well just put these on instead of the ones I usually. Let me make sure you see it. See, I've actually got the baseline for every tier. So I got $500,000. So I would start at $335,000, which would have a base of $113,900 in taxes. And then I've got to go to $500,000, which would be $165,000 more. See, that took me to $335,000. And now that $165,000 will take me on up the rest of the way to $500,000. And that's at, what's the tax rate there? My ass, that's 39%. Oh, I wrote that wrong. No, it is 34. Oh, that's the thing. Let me tell you about that. Do you see how if you make, your tax rate goes down if you make up to 10 million? Oh, anyway. Okay, so then we go 34%. What's 34% times $165,000? Say it out. $56,100. So the tax bill is $170,000. Do you see it? That was way too easy. But I will put that version of the tax tables. Traditionally, I've put in the ones that didn't just had the percentages, but these have the baseline, so I might as well put them in since apparently that's now popular. Okay, that's that. Now it's time for the essay questions. Bear with me. A couple of pointers before we get into the actual questions. First things first, one sentence only. Only one sentence, and it's a complete sentence, not a part of a sentence. It has a subject and a verb. If it's a transitive verb, it has a direct object, the whole nine yards, and no bizarre commas or anything like that. Just say what you have to say in a complete sentence. I get griped at a whole lot by business people who say we want answers and we want short answers to our questions. That's why you won't see me like some teachers assigning giant essays and crap like that. In the business world, those are rare. Usually your communication, if your boss wants an answer, he wants one sentence. He doesn't want you to write a J.K. Rowling trivial pedantic novel written for idiots. Okay, so give me a sentence, one. And don't do a run-on sentence so you can try to pack more in than would be in a normal one sentence. The next thing that I'll give you a piece of advice, say what you have to say in the sentence. Don't ever start a sentence for me with I believe or I feel. If I say, what is financial intermediation? Don't say, I believe that financial intermediation is, God, I don't give a rat's ass what you believe. Just say financial intermediation is the matching of surplus and deficit economic units, taking into account level timing and risk. Okay, another thing about it is also, if I have given you a straight up definition, use that. Because generally in the business world, they don't want you to be creative. That whole thing, thinking out of the box, don't, because usually you're going to end up inventing the box again, and you'll spend a lot of extra money doing so. So just give me the answer that you're thinking, and that you've heard me give you. And that should be enough to make it work. Now, another thing about your answers. If you're looking for information, go first to your notes and then to those podcasts. I work those podcasts thinking about you and all these notes that you've got. That's why they're there. The thing is that when you go on the, you've ever heard the story that on the internet, the person with whom you are talking might be a cat? Well, in fact, it actually is a cat. Let me look here very briefly. I'm going to show you what I mean by that. Hang on here. And you know why I know it's a cat? If you go to Wikipedia or Investostupedia to get an answer, a cat has answered your question, and it's this cat right here that actually answered your question. That's my cat, Phineas. He goes on the internet, and he answers questions from finance students to mess with their minds. And then he looked happy with himself. See how pleased he is? He screwed up a whole bunch of students who thought they could go on Wikistupedia and get an answer. And now...
Are you a cowboy?
No, I'm a photographer. You look like you do and try to sell pictures, you'll call it Geeks or Us, okay? I look like I do when I sell my pictures. I will get ladies to buy my pictures. Phineas is a cat. Now, don't look up answers on places like Investostupedia or Wikistupedia. That's for dumbbell hillbillies. Your college students. You have me, your dear funny uncle. Okay? Now, getting down to the basics. I'm going to give you some questions, 16 questions. Five will be on the exam. You answer four. You'll have space for four. Answer four. Don't try to do five and say, pick out the ones that were the best, prof. No. Oh, for God's sake. I shouldn't complain. I shouldn't do that because my phone went off. At least I don't have one of those stupid ringtones. You heard that, you know, these... ringtones that are rap music, thumpa thumpa mofo, thumpa thumpa ho ho, thumpa thumpa bitch. I mean, what the hell? Or the prairie hillbilly music, it don't hurt anymore. Or some of that stupid music by, who's that woman singer, Bernice or Bounce? Oh, Beyonce, yes. What is money? And what are the three types? Now, I'm going to even do you one good on this one. Give me the answer in one sentence. What is money and what are the three types? Work it.
Medium of exchange.
And what are the three types?
No.
Money is not a medium of exchange?
Money, that's one of its functions. Money is anything money that is accepted in exchange for something of value. That's all.
You never let me complete.
I know, because you've gotten it wrong. See, in combat, you die. And that's cool with me because I get extra chow that night. And what are the three and the three types are barter, commodity, and fiat. That's all you have to say to get 5 big points, and Mom puts this up on the refrigerator. And let me tell you, that's going to make the Christmas gifts flow. Yeah. What is liquidity? That's another one I could ask. What is liquidity? What are the three duties of the Federal Reserve? Wait. Hey, Cor. Shut up. You let it go. Like having, I feel like some gazelle while the Serengeti and the hyena are gathering to bring me down. A corporation that has positive net income can use it 2 different ways. What are they? A corporation that has positive net income can use it 2 different ways. What are they? Yeah. You just gave me the answer. You just gave everyone the answer. Yeah.
Yeah, we should do it like that.
No, I know.
That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Because Phineas is in the audience there pretending he's a guy, a person.
So reinvestment and dividends?
Yeah, you're right, though. You're right. That one's one that I've done that one in the past, and actually I'm kind of glad you did that because it sounds like it's so open-ended. What do you mean by that? Well, they can plow back or they can pay dividends. And then the second part of that question would be something along, I could have done something along the line of, what's the trade-off? Well, if they pay dividends, they don't grow because they don't have any money to put back in the company. But if they put all the money back in the company, their shareholders are going to bitch their heads off because there's no dividends. So it's there's a trade-off in there. Okay. Yeah. Say that last part again.
If it's a new company,
they're just going to plow it back in.
Okay, so, but
in a place like that, in a company like that, normally, if a company isn't paying a dividend, or if its dividend fluctuates, that's a problem. But in a new start company, its prospects are going to ride entirely on how fast and hard it can plow money back in. But at the same time, it's going to be risky doing it that way. So the price is not going to look very good for a while if the company's pouring its money back in, because you might end up getting nothing. You didn't get a dividend and the company fizzled anyway. Who has the prior claim on cash flows of a corporation? And who has the residual claim? Who has the prior claim? Yeah, well, you stop answering the daggone question. No. Yeah, who has the prior claim on the residual funds, on the funds of a corporation, and who has the residual claim? That, in other words, who gets paid first, who gets paid last? Now, bondholders, because they can just simply shut down the corporation, liquidate the assets, you have to pay them first in a timely manner. Now, you don't have to pay off the bondholders. You've got some structured agreement. But you've got to make your payments in a timely manner, pay off your bills that are due in a timely manner, And only if that you've done that can you give the shareholders anything, either as dividends or as plowback. And that's just simply the corporate life. That's the danger, by the way. Remember why I was showing you the gains to leverage. The gains to leverage is wonderful, except that you got to pay the bills before you got any money left for yourself. Now, I'm just going to run through some other ones here pretty quickly. What is meant by market cap? What is meant by market cap? What does the beta of a security measure? What does the beta of a security measure? A diversified portfolio can be achieved through mutual funds or ETFs. Explain an advantage and a disadvantage of each over the other. Explain an advantage and a disadvantage of each over the other. What are the three tools of monetary policy available to the Fed? What are the three tools of monetary policy available to the Fed? What does the domestic trading desk at the Federal Reserve do? What does the domestic trading desk at the Federal Reserve do? What is financial intermediation? What are the components of the risk premium? What is the relationship between risk and return? A company's current ratio should be neither too high nor too low. Explain. A company's current ratio should be neither too high nor too low. Explain. An increasing debt to total asset ratio has an upside and a downside. Explain. Debt to total assets. An increase in debt to total assets, an increase in the debt to total assets ratio has an upside and a downside. Explain. Now, I'm even going to tell you the model answer for this one to show you that you need only one sentence. The upside is that the return on equity is magnified by gains to leverage. The downside is that the risk of default on the debt is increased. That's all you have to say. The upside is that the return on equity is magnified through the gains to leverage. And the downside is that the risk of default increases. That's all you have to say to get a perfect score. Now, let me go on here. Give two reasons why accounting statement information is insufficient for financial analysis. Again, give two reasons why accounting statement information is insufficient for financial analysis. Now, you should, in an answer like that, key on how cost is reported in accounting versus how it has to be considered in real life. And what is the sunk cost fallacy? What is the sunk cost fallacy? All five of the questions are going to come from those, and that was 17. If you can answer those in one sentence, then you're in business. I'll be in my office tomorrow from about noon until 1, and then my office hours on Wednesday before the test. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.